Welcome to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome Sally Taylor, the creator of the innovative program Consensus that explores and inspires art and creativity. Please join us as we talk about how she developed this amazing program, the website, the educational curricula developed in partnership with Harvard, and lots more. Hey, before we begin, please hit the like, follow, and subscribe buttons down there, and all of the other buttons you happen to see. Also, leave a comment. It's an easy thing to do, and it really helps the channel a lot. Thank you. Let's see what we get. And we are welcoming to the program Sally Taylor, the creator of Consensus. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Roger. It's good to see you.
Thank you. It's nice to be seen. Good to see you, too. It's been a while. I think the last time I saw you was about 5 years ago during the lockdown, and you were doing an online seminar, and I participated. You did two, and I did the first one, and I was supposed to do the second one. We had a family emergency, and I had to bail at the last second. But I don't know if you did any more than that. But those were really.
I think it was just the two. It became overwhelming with everything else that was going on in the world. So. but two was great. Two was a wonderful experience for sure.
I really enjoyed it. I'll be honest with you. I went into it with a little skepticism, you know, and teach creativity kind of thing, you know. And lo and behold, I managed to bust out a little tune. And
I remember that, Roger. It was fantastic. You're a very beautiful musician.
Thank you. That's very nice to hear. I'll take that one. So, and you're a musician too. I mean, I was for a while there. I was privy to your, you were publishing your diaries from being on the road and all that kind of stuff. Great stories. And for any of us who've ever done road trips, yep, get it.
Those are being edited. Actually, today I'm getting the first draft of that back as a road tales sort of, you know, manuscript that I'm going to release at some point. So
awesome.
Publish book at some point. So
well, you'll have to, when it comes out, you'll have to come back on the program and we'll chat about that for a while.
All right. That idea.
So Consensus. Okay. So let's start with, what is the concept behind Consensus? What is this?
Well, Consensus evolved as, it actually evolved from a fable about these blind men who are wandering through this ancient forest and they stumble upon a giant elephant in their path. And each of the blind men feels a different part of this elephant's body and concludes a completely different reality about it. You know, the one that feels the tail thinks he's holding a rope. The one that feels the tusk thinks he's confronting a spear. One that, you know, feels the ear thinks it's a fan. The one that feels the side thinks it's a wall. And so they're fighting. They're in the midst of this fight when this wise king comes along and he says, everybody stop fighting. You're all feeling something that's much bigger than yourself that you don't have access to singularly. You're limited in your capacity to understand this thing. So try to collaborate, try to explain what you're experiencing to somebody else, and together maybe you'll come up with what the real thing is, the real beast is that you're touching. And when I heard that fable, I was in college and I thought, oh my God, we're all blind men. We're all
right.
You know, we're thinking we're right, but we're only touching one part of reality. And we just can't get around to all of it in a lifetime. We can't possibly understand the scope of it. But maybe if we could access each other's versions of truth, perhaps we could see beyond our limited perspectives. And perhaps we could have less fear around not knowing, because I think that the not knowing and thinking we're supposed to know something is what really sort of causes this sort of existential crisis. And it was from this fable that Consensus was born, C-O-N-S-E-N-S-E-S, like with the senses.
Right.
And the way I went about it is I sort of created my own elephant. I selected 22 different photographs that each represented one thing. And
Wow.
then I gave each of those photographs to a different musician. And I said, what does this mean to you? There's no right or wrong answer. I just want to understand this photograph through your musicality,
Right.
your history, through your understanding of truth. And they got back to me 22 different songs. And I took those 22 songs and I gave them each to a different dancer. And again, I said, you don't know where this came from, but I want you to interpret what it means to you and express it as movement. And so each of these dancers created these dances that represented the music. And then the dances I gave to perfumers. And the perfumes
Wow, that's a thought.
I gave the perfumes to poets, and the poems to fashion designers, and the fashion to chefs, and so on and so forth. And I really wanted to represent all the different modalities of interpretation. I wanted to represent, sight, sound, touch, hearing, or but now I'm just messing them up. But you know what they are. You know what
Absolutely.
the
Yeah,
buzz is.
right.
So that was sort of my goal, was to sort of offer a sort of a game of telephone through the senses that people could see and sort of follow along in this progression. Almost like a lineage, where you don't get to see, you don't get to know who your great 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 grandfather is, but you might carry around his smile, or you might not know, where this, passion for, ecology comes from. But like, it might be just sitting back there in your history and you'd have no access to understanding it. But with these progressions, you're able to see in real time how one thing is passed to the next and becomes something new. And it keeps on iterating itself. And in the bigger scope of things, once I was done, there was over 350 pieces of art that were now
Wow.
redefining what the elephant was, right? So
Right.
what I discovered in this process is that not only are we interpreting the world around us inaccurately at best, but a version. But we're also creating a world. We are creating a world for each other, and we can't see because we're so limited. We're so, we're these beautiful, precious, limited blind men, that we can't possibly see beyond the scope of our, limited time frame on the planet, or the very limited, fraction of, sound that we can interpret, or sight that we can interpret, or smell that we can interpret. But we can, for a moment, take it for granted that we can't see everything, and take it for granted that there is this larger essence where we're all connected. Because through these chain reactions, what I got to see, and I've been doing this now, consensus projects all over the world for 14 years, what I've been able to see is that each of these progressions are saying the same thing. They
Okay, and that
each
is.
contain the same elements. So in one chain, you might see blue recurring, over and over and over again, even though there's these gaps where things go from, a visual photograph to a perfume to a painting to a piece of music to a dance, where there's these, these moments where there's no visual available. You see these chain reactions contain within them the same elements over and over and over again. And to me, that sort of helps me to feel less afraid of being a human on the planet, not knowing what the elephant is. And I hope that that's what it does for other people. I hope that it lets them know, okay, we're not alone. We're actually super connected. And not knowing is what makes us make art.
It's kind of a grown-up version of what I said years ago to some people, and that is that, if you stand on the south side of the tree and look at it, and I stand on the north side of the tree and look at it, and we both look at the same tree, we're going to see different things. And it's the same tree, but yours is a more grown-up version. I like yours
I don't know about grown up. It might
better.
be just a larger scope of it, but I think it's the same message.
So when I first became aware of consensus, it was actually through a friend of mine who's a photographer, Jane Rosemont. She said, "You got to check this out."
Love Jane.
I'm sorry?
I love Jane.
Oh, isn't she great? And
Wonderful.
man, we go back a moment. So anyway, and her husband Dick. Do you know Dick too?
I don't know Dick, but I've talked to Jane quite a bit, and she's told me a lot about him. And
They
yeah,
are absolutely wonderful people.
they
Wonderful people.
really, yeah, they're
So
exciting.
anyway, I first became aware of it, and she said, "God, Roger, you got to be a part of this." So I said, "Okay," and you were kind enough to include a couple of my pieces at one point. So the old consensus, and it's evolved a little bit. Let's talk about the old one that was online. What was that, and what were you doing within that concept?
Well, the first consensus was something that I started in 2012, and it was that one that I was just referring to, that 22 pieces, which iterated over 350 pieces of art. And it was online, as all the pieces are. I mean, even the ones that are extinct now, the consensuses that have re-crumbled into the earth and become dust are still alive and well on the internet at consensus.org. And they've sort of they exist as galleries in themselves, as where people can go and sort of trace through these lineages and also read what I see as sort of the glue between them, which is each artist interprets what it means to them, what they're interpreting, and then they respond with an artist statement that says, this is what I saw, this is what I created. And then the next person doesn't have access to that or the title of the piece, but then says, this is what I interpreted, this is what I created. And so it sort of glues these chains together in really this magical thing where everybody is interpreting perhaps something unique and different in what they're seeing, but somehow saying the same thing. And so, I knew when I'd done the first one, which I hosted on Martha's Vineyard initially in 2014. It took me 2 years to create, you can imagine, because I'm working with all of these artists across the
Oh,
world
sure.
and not knowing at all what I'm doing. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, like, if I give a poem to a perfumer, will they like laugh me out of the room? I really didn't know what I was doing, but I just felt really, really called to it. It was actually a concept that I'd had in 19, I think 1999. I have it in my journal as an iteration of it that I threw out because there wasn't the internet. The internet wasn't around to actually facilitate it. But when the internet came around in 2012, robust enough for me to access these artists from around the world, I thought, I woke up in the middle of the night in Thailand once in a February, I think it was February 2nd of 2012, and the idea was so noisy in my head that it got me out of bed, and it said in my ear, "Get up and get a pen. It's time." And I have it in my journal. I have the drawing of it and what it was going to look like. It was going to be these six different rooms. Of course, it turned into 22 different rooms, but it was going to be these six different rooms that were each designed by a different set designer based on the pieces on that particular chain. And that's what it ended up as.
So the website and consensus in general, we had all of this amazing amount of creativity going on, but I think you had an outreach thing going on too at one point, right?
The challenges, the creative challenges, is that what you're referring to? Yeah, that's, I think you participated in a couple of those. There was a monthly challenge, and the way that it went is that we would post a piece of artwork and then ask our audience, interpret what this means to you, and we'll pick one from the bunch every month, and then that will become the next monthly challenge. So That was really exciting because I think it gave, our people who were really excited about consensus and really got it from the jump an opportunity to participate. Because what I really want artists, what I want people to know is that they're all artists. They might not be, they might not have honed their craft yet, but they're making up the most beautiful vision of the world and walking around with it in their heads.
Right.
And all they need to do is work on their vocal cords or on their writing or on their painting,
Sure.
and they can participate in this conversation about what it means to be on the planet. I sort of I've been thinking a lot about DNA as being the paintbrush that the universe is you that the universe uses to paint a picture of itself,
Oh, okay.
and that the medium is discomfort and pain and isolation and feeling separate. And it's only in that state that we're actually willing to reach toward connectivity. And in that reaching and in that longing for connection, we create art in reaction. So that's what I've been thinking about today.
So now the new consensus, I was on that site recently, and you're going to different geographic locations and working with local artists. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we during lockdown, we thought, an interesting idea would be to take consensus out of museums and galleries, because we don't think of we didn't want to sort of create this sort of museum, like there's some people who qualify as artists and others that don't. So we really wanted to create consensus on the street in local communities. So what we did is we selected we would have a partner and they would come to us and say, "Hey, we want to do this." And I'd say, "Okay, pick out your artists from your town. Let's ask them to participate." And then we'd find, a local barista, let's say, and a candle maker who uses essential oils, and we'd find a musician and a painter and a poet, and we try to get the complexity of the population into the conversation, the consensus conversation. And then we'd run the consensus process, which is, we'd pick a piece of local art that was on display all the time that people were probably walking by and taking for granted. And then we'd go and we'd take that sculpture. We'd say, "Okay, local musician, go and see this sculpture and interpret it, what it means to you, and create a song." We'd then take their song and we'd give it to, the barista down the street, and we'd say, "Okay, what would this be if it were a coffee drink?" And then we take the coffee and we bring it to the library, where the librarian is also the local poet laureate, and she'd create a poem in reaction to the barista drink, and so on and so forth. And we created these sort of maps through town where people could go and take a QR code led trip through these pieces of art to uncover what this sculpture that had been, the primary art form or the art piece that had, represented the area, what that new version could say about the town. And so we've done this now in, I think, like 10, maybe 12 different places. And it takes about a year, whenever a partner comes to us, and that could be like, a local school, or it could be a singular person who owns a flower shop and just really wants to participate. And we just go, "Okay, this is how we're going to do it." And we embark in this adventure for a year, and it's proven to be really nutritious for my soul.
How many more you got coming up?
Zero right now. We're taking a little bit of a hiatus just because I'm trying to get this book, the road journals written, and and so there's just
Time
other.
is such a valuable commodity and so
It
easily
is.
used.
It is. But if the right project comes along, I'll definitely pick it up. I'm not shy about you ha having multiple, juggling multiple projects.
Wow, that's the artist in you.
True. True.
I
Busted. Thanks, Kevin.
think we all do that. It's like, well, I think I'll do this, and I think I'll do this, and this sounds good. And all of a sudden, you realize you got, way too many plates
Right.
that you're juggling. So, anyway, so do you do? Is there an educational component? Do you reach out to schools or anything like that? So,
Almost
are
as soon as the first consensus went up, schools started asking if we could create a curricula or some sort of format that that they could use for their classrooms to help their kids to see from each other's perspectives.
Ah, beautiful.
And so, with the help of Harvard Education School of Education, I worked on this curriculum for 2 years, which lives on line, and it's probably the thing that I've worked on the hardest and iterated the most in the past, I don't know, like 12 years. And it's got a teacher training component, and the way that the curriculum works is that the teacher sort of selects a subject that they want to understand through their student's perspective. Could be a
Huh.
poem. Could be the school mission statement. Could be anything. And then they the curriculum is such that it teaches a small lesson in each medium, each class. So when students when you go to the students and you say, okay, I'm going to ask you to take a picture of this poem, whatever it means to you, right? And each student takes a different photo. And then those photos are all mixed, and given to another student in the class. And each student has to write a song about it. And there's a little class about, tone and timbre and color and, basically how to paint the photograph that they've received with sound.
Right.
And so the students do that, and then it's passed on to them for music, or sorry, for movement, and then for poetry, and they get these seven different mediums to actually experiment with. And it's really exciting. I mean, the kids that have done it, and at the end there's a big sort of, the schools put together like little gallery spaces within their schools, and they have open it to the public and stuff, and that's really cool. But the thing that I love most about it, I mean, even more than how much I love that the students go, oh my gosh, I realized that, I only have one version of Marcia, and my version isn't necessarily right, and I've been like trying to get everybody to see my version of Marcia and assuming that everybody is, and nobody is. And like, why am I so worried about everybody, each singular person's perspective of me? Like, that's exciting. But the thing that I love most is when kids take one of the medium that they explored and then they use it moving forward to become an artist.
Oh, wonderful.
And like, I had a kid recently come to me and say, I'm a photographer now because of the lesson angle and what, taking a picture from high up means, as opposed to from low down, as opposed to eye level, as opposed to, far back. It helped him to see that, angle cr and perspective really creates intention. And
That's really exciting. Yeah, I've spent most of my adult life working, teaching and teaching children a lot of very young children and such. And at some point in there, early on for me, there is a recognition that it's a huge responsibility. That
huge.
you just all of a sudden you're going, I'm filling this vessel, so I better be doing it right. Better be putting the good stuff in.
That's very loving. That's a very loving way to put it.
And so it's so did you have that moment too when you were doing it?
Yeah, I think probably the reason I took so long with it is because I really do think teachers, have a huge obligation to not only supply information, but to do so with encouragement and self, the growing of self-esteem. Because I think that there's something interesting with, and I've taught music too at Berklee School of Music. I think that there's the problem with education. Now we're getting into it. The problem with education is that it gives you the false belief that you will know something at the end. And I think that thinking that you're going to know and that it's going to save your life is a greater problem, because I think when you say you don't have to know and it's going to be okay is really what I'm trying to provide through consensus, is the sense of like, I don't know either. I only have this tiny little sliver that I understand of the elephant, and you have as much as I do. And I need to learn from you what you know so that I can know more. I don't know that that's the relief that I think comes from a good teacher.
For me, it was always encouraging the kids to say, okay, you can put your fingers here and we can create the notes this way, but that's not creating music. That's a different thing. And teaching them to find their own voice. You don't have to sound just like the record. You don't have to sound exactly like this. You know, that I can, with classical, which is primarily what I do, I can program a computer to play those notes. But it ain't music. And then they begin to understand when I play it note for note, pitch perfect, you know, metronomically perfect and all that kind of stuff. That, okay, here's a song. And then I come back to it and then I start to interpret it, put my own little spin on it. I don't change any of the notes, but it starts to breathe, it starts to rise and fall. There's dynamics, all these things like that. And then they start to understand, and I say, you don't have to sound like me. You have to sound like you. I don't want to hear you sound like me. I want to hear you sound like you. And it's a frightening at first, because it's like, how do I know if I'm right? And at some point I hopefully convince them that honesty is the right, everything else is wrong. So it's been a great trip for, I mean, I've been
That's beautiful.
I
That's
started
beautiful.
teaching in 1968, so
Amazing. Amazing.
it's a, yeah, I see it from my side.
Great.
It's
Yeah, that's pretty outstanding.
like
That's
so
pretty
anyway,
amazing.
so well, what kind of effect has this whole consensus had on you? I mean, how are you different today than you were 14 years ago? Other than you're 14 years older.
Yeah, that's true. How has it changed me? Well, it's made me feel more connected to everything. You know, there's a quote that my dad always used to say, which is, only everything is everything.
That's interesting. Okay.
And I think that I tr was trying to metabolize what that meant to me through this project. And what I think it means to me now is that, you know, every single thing is everything. You can't have everything without every single thing.
Right.
But also, within every single thing, there is also everything.
Okay.
And I think that that's what I've discovered, is that, you know, you can as easily find truth in a spoon as you can by looking at the stars. And because you just have to be patient, you know, patient enough and meditative enough to be present for a little bit. And I think that that's what art does, is it forces you to be present. You can't hear if you're not present, right?
Right.
Like, your ears are in the moment. You can be thinking, you know, 5 steps down the road or 12 days ago, but you can't hear anything when you're there. And you can't taste anything when you're not in the moment. And you can't smell anything. And you can't touch anything. Can't feel anything, I should say. And so I think that art is meditation on the moment. And so in that way, looking at art is also creating art.
Yes. So what's on the horizon for consensus? More of the same, or do we have something new to look forward
There's always something coming up, you know. I always sort of think
to?
about it as being this mysterious, magical beast that I am riding on top of, and with I'm supposed to have really loose reins with it. Like it knows where it wants to go. I just have to keep it from killing itself. And I'm always sort of, up for when it wants to wake me up in the middle of the night and, tell me what to do. And I'm always sort of I'm always up for the opportunities that come its way. And that being said, I also don't push it. Like even with the artists that work on it, when I go to them, I say, "Does this feel like something that feels like you have to do it?" Because that's who it's for. If you feel like you need to know who else is participating or, what's in it for you, this is not the right project for you. But if this feels like, oh my gosh, I have to participate in this, this just feels so good, this feels so right, then it's the right project for you. And I feel the same way with, when people come to me and they say, I really need to do this. And I'm like, I don't have any time. And they say, we have to. And I go, okay, we're going to do it.
Back to that multitasking thing we were talking about a moment
Yeah.
ago.
So I don't know. The answer is I don't know. There's nothing immediate. I have a little twinkle of an idea that's formulating itself around another local piece, but it's too early to say.
That's fair. So, well, Sally, I so appreciate you taking the time out of your day to hang out with me.
Me
It's
too. Thank you, Roger.
greatly appreciated. It really is.
Thank
And I'm kind of
you.
looking forward to all the other stuff and looking forward to the book. I enjoyed reading those diaries online, so this will be fun to get the book when it comes out.
Oh,
So
fantastic,
that's
Roger.
giving birth to a book, man, that's hard.
It's hard. Another adventure.
So thank you so much, and we'll chat soon, I hope.
Thank you, Roger. It's a
Bye-bye.
pleasure to see you.
I'd like to thank Sally Taylor for taking the time from her very busy schedule to talk with me. If you would like to know more about Consensus, there is a link in the description below. Also, don't forget to go to www.rogerhumphrey.com and subscribe to my blog. It's a great way to get updates on my past guests, and I promise, no spam, ever. And thank you also for spending time with us. Don't forget to grab some friends and share some of your favorite episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.